All right, another one of our monthly-ish traditions today, our awards pod for the season so far. Danny is going to be joining me for that. Wanted to remind you, too, we didn't record last night, or actually, I guess it would be two nights ago at this point by the time we're airing this. But go back and check out the Lockdown Warriors from Tuesday if you wanted to hear more about Clay's 60-point game. Danny and I talked about that just for about 30 minutes on a Warriors-specific pod, so you're not allowed to criticize us for talking about the Warriors. Our sponsors today, Hint Water. You can get a single variety pack shipped directly to your door, including three bottles each of their four most popular flavors. That's normally $24 for only $15 at drinkhint.com/capspace. As the URL. And then a sponsor that I have enjoyed quite a bit recently, Soothe. Soothe.com to schedule your appointment today, and that Capspace code will get you $30 towards your first in-home massage. I also wanted to remind any advertisers who might be interested in coming on the show, certainly podcast advertising, I think, is the best way, the most cost-efficient way, frankly, if I were trying to advertise something, not only on this show, but just any show, to advertise your product. If you compare it to the radio, you know that people are actually listening to podcasts, which is nice. I'd like to think we have a pretty engaged listener base. So if you're interested in sponsoring the show, natebduncan@gmail.com. Send me an email. All right, Danny, let's get started with, and we should say too, this is, we do this kind of every month, but we're really more doing it up until the time that we're recording. So there'll be a little bit of December, a little bit of October in this as well, mostly comprised of November, of course. So we're going to start with the big one, the MVP.
I will note that I actually did a lot of the player work for mine on December 1st, so mine might be a little bit more November tilted, but my MVP, regardless if we were doing it the 1st or the 6th or whatever day, is Russell Westbrook. He is such a central part of what Oklahoma City does, particularly in the offensive end, in a way that the multitude of legitimate candidates just can't quite match.
Yeah, for me, I agree with you. For me, it's Westbrook. And I guess, suppose it's worth going through my criteria here. I look at, obviously, how the team has played overall, how the team has played with the player on the court. RPM is something that I'll look at, although that's really subject to some sample size noise, and especially at this point in the year, if a guy doesn't have a good backup, that can really inflate, or if they do have a good backup, deflate their RPM, or same thing with the players that they're playing with. I'll look at PER, and my biggest tiebreaker at this point in the year, because you have so many players who are so close, is just who I think has been better recently, who I think has been better in the playoffs, and that'll be a big part of it. But with Westbrook averaging a triple-double the way he is, also the Thunder have a plus 6.8 net rating when he is on the floor, negative 14.3 when he is off. Part of that is because his backup is Samaje Christen and their team just isn't that good, so you don't want to reward someone too much there. But I think they have done better in terms of their one loss record than I expected, and especially looking at their offense, he is 106.9 offensive rating when he's on the floor, 92.7 offensive rating when he is off the floor. You're supposed to vote for three in the MVP. Harden and then Kevin Durant were my second and third. Who did you have as your second and third?
I had Chris Paul second. The time between December 1st and now has weakened that, but that's where it was at that time. And James Harden third. Harden has been immensely impressive this year, but I thought Chris Paul has been more important to both the Clippers offense and defense as a sum total. And for me, my criteria, if we're just talking criteria for MVP, is pretty basic. It's if you replaced that individual with a league average starter at their position, which team would have the greatest decrease in victories? And there are a lot of measures, a lot of things that I use to consider it, but that's the basic criteria. And for me, that's why Westbrook was one, Paul was two, and Harden was three, just the distance they would fall.
Chris Paul still leading the league in RPM. His defensive RPM is like plus 3.5. I'm sorry, no point guard is actually that valuable on defense, even if he is a wonderful defensive point guard, one of the best in the league. His ability to hold up on some of the switching that they've been doing has been really important, but I can't buy that. And I think also Paul is just, I think he's 31 now. how he was shooting red hot at the start of the year. He had started to regress recently back to kind of what his normal statistics are. And he's still a wonderful player. He's still a top 10 player, top six, top seven player in the league. But I wasn't quite, this was one of the ones too where I was like, all right, you know, Russ, this is his first year doing this. He's been this all-encompassing force. CP, I think we know the level that he's at. He was doing some things that I thought were less likely to sustain than what Russ was doing. And so that's why I had Chris Paul probably, you know, in the 4, 5, 6 type of range. I didn't do the rankings down there. I thought the more difficult thing to handle, and Harden, same thing with the Rockets playing well, and what he's doing with the assist numbers. I mean, the defense really is not that much better, but then, you know, same thing with the on-off. He's been huge there. KD at third, what did you think about that? Like, where was he in the discussion for you?
He was very close. It was a lot of different guys, LeBron, Kawhi, KD, but that was really maybe that next tier was really all those guys together. And Durant has been so consistent for the Warriors that it's been a major force, because a lot of the other guys, as great as the Golden State has been, particularly offensively, have been very inconsistent. And Durant has just hammered away. He gets his 25, 30 points on 13, 14 shots. And his defense hasn't been great every night, but it has been big at certain moments. And you can tell the impact in that. Like, that variance has a great impact on their success on the defensive end.
Yeah, if KD, I mean, he's got a 68% true shooting right now, which I think is leading the league. He's got a much lower usage, around 27. So he's down about 3-4% from where he was in OKC. I mean, he has been essentially, he's to their defense, as you mentioned, he's been assisting quite a bit. He is the highest number of block shots and close to the highest number of steals, I think, of his career. It's when you're watching the game, and maybe that's just because of the nature of his game, where he's not just like blowing up and controlling everything the way that you expect to see from a lot of superstars. I mean, that's his game. I'm not saying it's not effective, but it's just not quite with these levels that we've seen from Russ and Harden. Obviously, Golden State has been wonderful. I think, because this is useful too for the All-NBA, which we're going to do after this, to talk about some of the other candidates. What is your treatment right now of Stephen Curry?
He's having a really good year, but he hasn't been the most important part of their success overall, though a really great counter to that was the Rockets game, where once he went out, granted it was also second overtime, lots of other stuff going into play, but also, I guess, in that second quarter when he got early foul trouble, that the offense completely disintegrated. So maybe he is more important.
He is the best net rating on the team right now, too. They're only, I mean, granted, a lot of garbage time here, but they're only 3.9 points per 100 possession in the positive when he's off the floor. And he's only a point better than KD is. And I think Steph plays with Draymond and KD plays with Klay when they are not playing together. And so I think Draymond probably helps, you know, just in terms of the on-off, maybe a little bit more than Klay does. 60-point game aside, Klay's had kind of, you know, a rough start to the year early on. So, you know, it's interesting. I mean, who's more important to them, Steph or KD? That's going to be a very interesting question to find out. And I think, you know, maybe my thought on that, and this is something I'm sure we'll get into much more over the course of the year, is that I think if you took KD off the team just because of what if you took KD off the team and replaced him, you know, with the Harrison Barnes type of kind of average small forward, or what, you know, what Barnes gave them last year, I think that would hurt the team a lot less than if you took Steph off the team and replaced him with just kind of your average run of the mill point guard.
Certainly fair.
I still think that Steph is, I mean, all three of those guys and Draymond too are part of what makes Golden State special, but he is what makes them the most special, the most difficult to defend when they really, you know, and they just haven't been giving him the ball as much either. You know, I still think he has that capability. Now he hasn't played as well. I mean, he's kind of back to the level this year that he was, you know, maybe at this in early on in his MVP season, the first MVP season. He hasn't been the player that he was last year. I'm not sure that he has that in him anymore, and we may never find out, which is kind of too bad. But Steph is still pure in this discussion. And the other guys I had, LeBron, Kawhi, and then of course Anthony Davis, who's leading the league in PER right now too, even though his team has not been that good, and he's much lower in the RPM rankings. But I think we're just very lucky right now to have these top seven guys in the league, all healthy and all playing this well right now. Like, this has been a wonderful month of basketball, mostly because guys aren't getting injured yet, at least the best players in the league.
I feel like the other couple guys that have to be discussed, and there are other candidates that are legitimate, but LeBron has been huge for the Cavaliers. We've seen that throughout the season, that when he's been out, including a little bit against the Raptors, they haven't looked right. And then Kawhi has taken on a larger role for the Spurs this year. And yeah, their defense isn't where it was. I don't blame him at all for that, because their personnel is just significantly inferior to what it was before. He's having another great offensive season. And then I'm sure you could throw in Anthony Davis. He's having a great year as well. And under my own criteria of the biggest difference between if they had him and they didn't, this Pelicans team without Davis is just completely dead in the water.
Yeah, that's true. But they're kind of dead in the water anyway. I mean, I think it's hard when your team is below 500, even if it's not. And for AD, we talked about this on the 15 and 60, that it may just not be possible for him to be good defensively with the offensive load that he's had to carry right now. But he hasn't really been that good defensively. I mean, I think he's been okay. Defensive RPM is okay. But I mean, we're talking about in Davis and James, the 13th and 14th players in the league right now in RPM. And obviously LeBron, I get it. He was fantastic in the finals. He definitely gets a boost for being a fantastic player, one of the greatest players ever, for reaching that level in the finals over a 7-game period. The MVP is a regular season award. And if it were close between him and someone else who hasn't played at the level that he's played all these years at the end of the year, I would probably give him the benefit of the doubt. But he hasn't been close enough. He also is right now 19th in the league in PR, only a 24 PR, well below the heights that he was in his heyday. And the on-off has still been really good for him. But the biggest thing, too, is his defense has not been good. And we've seen that, especially during this recent losing streak that they've had. He has not brought the effort in some games. The Bucks game, the Clippers game being a good example of those, both of which we watched last week. And so, again, this is not an important regular season for the Cavs. It's fine. But if you want to talk about what he's done so far, and he hasn't been as efficient as he has been in the past either. He's been awesome with the assists. He's focusing more on that. He's really been useful for getting those shooters on Cleveland to play so well. But he just hasn't been there yet.
Something else I wanted to bring up is also the strength of the other candidates. In another year, this kind of LeBron situation would be fine. But there are other people that are just playing above that standard. And so he can get the benefit of the doubt against some things, but he can't against what Russ is doing, what Harden's doing, what KD and Paul are doing.
Yeah, and I do think that probably a lot of the statistics are underrating what he's done so far, because you see what happens still when he goes off the floor for Cleveland. For Kawhi Leonard, started the year incredibly hot. That's dropped off a little bit. This has still been an excellent Spurs offense. A little troubling, though, and part of this is because he's starting the games with Tony Parker and with Pau Gasol, and Kyle Anderson was starting for a while when Danny Green was out for them too. But the Spurs have a 4.0 net rating when he's on, and 10.7 net rating when he's off. They're 6 points, almost 7 points per 100 possessions better when he's off the floor. That's not his fault, but it is shown really that, and his defensive RPM nowhere near the previous levels. Again, I think that's in large part because of the teammates. And we're seeing this with Paul George too. Certainly last night was a perfect example of that. The Clay 60-point game, that wings can be amazing in a good system, but I don't know that there's a wing who can make a good defense by himself. And whether you want to say, you know, value over replacement position, that's the argument that we made for Kawhi last year over some of the centers, and there weren't that many great centers. We'll talk about this a little bit more on defensive player of the year, but I think when your team is better when you're off the floor than when you're on, pretty hard for me to say, all right, you're the MVP.
I agreed.
All right, we're going to get to defensive player of the year momentarily. But first, I want to help you relax a little bit with Soothe. I've never really been a massage guy. My feeling always was when I got a back massage, I didn't want to get one because, you know, when just like a significant other would give me a back massage or something, I was like, wow, I noticed how sore I was, but it didn't really like get that much better. Well, it turns out that having a professional come to your house, a licensed therapist with all the essentials for a quality spa experience with a table, fresh linens, music, oils, lotions. Yeah, that's a little bit better than just getting a massage from someone who is a little bit less well-qualified. I actually got a sports massage because my legs are always sore ever since I tore up my knee a couple of years ago, and because I'm old and broken, and my legs just feel so much better ever since I got that. I'm definitely going to make this a regular part of my routine. it's also just incredibly easy and I think less expensive, at least in my experience and in my area, than going to see a massage therapist, because they don't have any kind of bricks and mortar that they have to pay for if they're just coming to your house. And it's so easy to book this. You just book it in less than 10 seconds on the mobile app, or I went to soothe.com to get it booked. And this week, my listeners can get $30 towards their first massage with Soothe, S-O-O-T-H-E. When entering that cap space code at checkout. So you can search Soothe in the App Store or on Google Play to download the app, or go to soothe.com and schedule your appointment today. Don't forget to enter that cap space code. You get $30 towards your first massage. And you also let them know that you came from us, which is important to supporting the show also. That's soothe.com, promo code cap space, Soothe, massage delivered to you. Defensive player of the year. Did you struggle with this one?
I didn't struggle with number one. For me, it's Draymond. And some of it might be the time frame, but he at that time, he was number one in defensive RPM. And a stat that I've been using a lot for The Athletic and various things is, as a proxy, the Warriors had, at that time, a 99.3 defensive rating when Draymond Green was on the floor and Zaza Pachulia was off it. So what that means is that they still have their fastball. They still have this defensive identity in them. It's just that they're playing different guys. They're not playing Andrew Bogut. They're not playing Fesezili. They aren't on the team anymore. Draymond has been huge, and there are other good candidates, but I think he's the best.
What about the argument that, yeah, when he's playing at center, he can ramp up the intensity, but he's only playing at center for 5, 6, 7 minutes a game here, and this is a regular season award. We're talking about the award of a season. He definitely was in my list as well, but I think I had him second. My top three was Rudy Gobert, Draymond, and DeAndre Jordan. Given how the Clippers have defended so far this season, I don't think that Jordan is going to stay in there necessarily. I think that Rudy Gobert, probably on a game-to-game basis, what he does for that team, I mean, his performance in that game at home against Houston, where it was basically just he and George Hill guarding the pick and roll 2-on-2 with Harden and Capella, and they did a great job against Houston defensively in that game. That was an example of what he's been able to do. He is kind of single-handedly keeping the Jazz D afloat right now when George Hill has been out, when Favors have been out. Those are their other two good defensive players. They still, and they haven't been elite without those two guys, but they've still been pretty good, and he's been the one doing it. So I would put him at number one, Draymond 2, DeAndre Jordan 3, just because I don't quite buy the Clippers' defensive performance as much. I mean, the fact that teams were shooting 30% on mid-range two-thirds of the way through the month didn't really have a ton to do with what DJ was doing. So that would be it. And I think Draymond, if you wanted to have one defensive player for the playoffs, I might pick him. But also, Golden State had some really ugly defensive performances early in the year that he was not able to stem that tide. So as those get further into the rearview mirror, they've been defending better lately. Maybe it'll be Draymond, but I like Gobert at least through this first month of the season.
My third place guy is different than yours, but similar logic, and it's Dwight Howard. I thought Howard, it's hard with the Hawks to really apportion it because they have a good scheme and they have good credit, but Dwight has played really well, and the defensive rebounding is a sea change, and he is the biggest personnel difference that they've made, and they're a great defense in a different way than they were last year. And I think that credit goes all over Budenholzer and many others, but Dwight has been great this year.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I think that he was just a little bit lower in the stats, which was a bit of a concern for me, and also the fact that I think he's got Millsap next to him, and you could make the argument that Millsap is as valuable or more valuable than he is. But certainly no argument with that choice. Just not the direction I went in. First team All-NBA. There are two guards, two forwards, and one center that must be picked.
Did you have the same level of emotional difficulty putting people on the second team because they couldn't fit? That was the problem for me. So my first team is, the first two are the same as my top two in the MVP, Westbrook and Chris Paul. Harden, of course, is heavy consideration. LeBron and Durant, and then DeMarcus Cousins is my first team center. There are a couple legitimate candidates, and we'll talk about those guys for second and third team.
Westbrook and Harden for me, same as my top two in MVP at the guards, KD and LeBron at the forwards. I wanted to do Kawhi, but that on-off was just a little bit too disturbing for me, and this was one of the ones where I went with LeBron has been better in the playoffs for longer as the tiebreaker. And then I went with AD at my as center.
Just cheater.
I don't know, he's played plenty of center.
Yeah,
like
that's true.
Like we used him as a center last year, I think, in our awards. So that's, I mean, I think he's clearly been better than Cousins. Cousins, yeah, I get it. He's been good. I'm just, the more they struggle year after year, new coaches, new players, they haven't been good on defense still. Yeah, I get that his numbers are good, but they've even been in the negative with him on the floor this year too. So I finally, he was going to make my team, but I with what AD has done, he was not really in consideration. I was looking for reasons basically to not have him on the first team, and making AD the center, especially, you know, the guy who leads the league in PER. He's still pretty up there in RPM as well. Actually 15th in defensive RPM, despite my observation that he hasn't been that good at times this year.
But a lot of that is that New Orleans defense overall has been a lot better this year.
Yeah, that's true too. And I mean, again, I'm not going to go crazy. Like Gorgui Dieng is 14th in defensive RPM, and I don't think of him as a very good defensive player at center. So there's a lot of noise. Trevor Booker is 18th in defensive RPM right now. There's a lot of noise in that statistic at the moment. So don't tweet me and say, you know, I'm taking this as gospel. It's just one part of the picture. But yeah, AD plays enough center. And the other thing too is, you know, you can say he doesn't start at center, but when he plays center, the other team, like, it's really hard for them to play a traditional center with his shooting if he's going to be the only big. And
he also closes at center.
Right.
So that's another, right. I think that's almost as important as him not starting there.
Yes, I agree with that. My second team, I mean, it's pretty amazing that Stephen Curry and Chris Paul are my starting guards on the second team. Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler were my forwards, and DeAndre Jordan was my center. But I think where it really started to get difficult for me was Butler as the forward. And he's been playing forward this year with Dwayne Wade as the shooting guard, so he's not a guard anymore. Might have made it a little easier for me to make him a guard on the third team instead. But with him playing forward, I had him. My struggle was with him, and then Draymond Green and Giannis, who are my third team forwards. But just so many great candidates this year. I mean, like, out of the top 20 players in the league, like, I don't know that, like, I mean, Dirk is really the only guy who's missed a ton of time at this point with injuries. It's great to see everyone playing so well. I really hope that continues. What was your second team, and did you, maybe we can just talk a little bit about the sort of the forward conundrum on the second and third team?
So I had Harden and Curry because we had the CP3 Harden difference, and then Kawhi, and my struggle, because I didn't classify him in the same way as you, was Butler versus Anthony Davis for that second team forward spot.
Yeah,
like,
I would say AD in that situation.
Yeah, which is what I did. I ended up with AD there, and that left me with Rudy Gobert. I think he's had a better season overall than DeAndre, especially as somebody who values defense over offense for a center. I understand DeAndre's had a wonderful season. I'm not criticizing that. But so for me, the forward issue was actually that, as opposed to it, if I had to move a guy around, then Giannis would have probably been on the team. So then my third team forwards were Jimmy and Draymond, and so they go together in that way. And then that actually opened up the guard rotation for me. And again, this was December 1st, not December 6th when we're recording this, was Kemba and Mike Conley. I didn't really think there were too many other really strong candidates for there. There are other guys having nice years, but I think those guys both stood out over the rest of the group.
Yeah, I guess I did this a little bit later than you, and Conley had already missed, I think, two or three games just due to rest before then. And now the fact that they got killed in the game that he missed was a little disturbing. But now the fact that he's, and also just the fact that he's going to be out for as long as he is, I had to take him out of consideration. I actually went with Kemba, just has been on fire. I don't know that I expect him to finish at this level at the end of the year, because a lot of that's been based on his shooting that is, again, well above his career norms. He could keep it up. Maybe he's just as good of a shooter now, but
like, for me, this is a moment in time. It's not necessarily about whether it's repeatable or not. I personally don't really care. Is that we're not, if I was predicting where the all NBA teams were going, this list would be somewhat different.
Yeah, I care a little bit, because I think if you're just kind of getting lucky, that doesn't mean you're that good. Now, you know, shooting is a little bit different than, because we talked about, oh, DeAndre Jordan, you know, did he have anything to do with the opponent shooting really poorly from mid-range against the Clippers? That's a little bit different than Kemba Walker shooting incredibly well, because he's actually doing that. But nonetheless, I did have him in there. And then my other guard was Kyle Lowry, but that was very difficult as well. I mean, Damian Lillard was in that conversation, I think, just with the Blazers' defense being so bad and him being a big part of that problem. And they're not really any better in offense this year yet compared to last year, and just their overall team performance not being that good. I left him out of there. DeRozan, another guy guy who got consideration for me, but when you just look at the on-off stuff, his defense is so bad that it was really difficult for me, no matter how well he was scoring, to put him in there. And just, you know, all of the on-off metrics don't really care for him very much. George Hill, if he'd played at the level that he'd played all year for and hadn't missed games, which I don't think he'll be able to sustain, but he would have been in there for me as well. And then, you know, John Wall actually is having a much better season, a guy who would be in consideration here in a normal year, but there have just been so many awesome offensive performances so far this year. And even, and Klay Thompson would have considered him too, even at, you know, the 60 point game sure helps, but he's also 24th in RPM among shooting guards. RPM has never really cared for him that much. I do think that that statistic really underrates him, especially defensively, but nonetheless, he just had too bad of a start to the year to quite get there for me. So Kemba and Kyle Lowry, Lowry again just killing it in the on-off stuff. The Raptors offense has been fantastic this year so far. I think they've played pretty well given an incredibly hard schedule, so he's in there for me for now.
I'm excited to see who you have as your third string, as your third team center, because your top two centers are both guys that didn't make mine.
I had DeMarcus Cousins.
Okay.
And Gobert was in that conversation for me. Marc Gasol as well, especially because you consider some of the enormous shots that Gasol has hit. He hit some crazy threes again against New Orleans. He hit that three that beat the Clippers. He had that tip-in that beat Denver. He had a huge three against New Orleans, the first overtime game that they played. After that double overtime yesterday, they played about 2 weeks before, and he hit an enormous three. So maybe I even should have put him, when I think about just hitting all those big shots, you think just in terms of the value that he's provided, even there, you know, how many wins has that gotten the Grizzlies? And they actually have continued to be competitive now, even with Conley out, I think, and with Randolph out and everybody else and their brother out, they're still winning games. So that's, maybe I should put him on the third team over Cousins. In fact, I think I'm going to, with having convinced myself with my own argument.
Where did you consider Karl Towns? Because I thought that was just a fascinating test case, because he's scoring a lot. It's in some ways parallel to Cousins, but he's doing it in kind of a different circumstance.
Yeah, their defense has been a tire fire, and he's been a big part of that. So
that's true. Yeah, that's why I ended up with DeAndre as my third team center.
He's also been playing most of his minutes at power forward. I mean, granted, he is a center. If you're going to put AD at center, you'd have to count him potentially at center too. But you know, he's been playing well. I think about kind of what we expected from him offensively, but the defense just has not been good enough for me. Let's talk about the forwards too. Who else is in consideration as the forwards for you? Giannis did not make it for you. And
that gave me physical pain.
Yeah, I think he just kind of deserves satisfaction at this point. Like, who else on the Bucks is good right now other than him?
Jabari, but
Jabari sucks on defense though. Like, when you look at how well they play when Jabari is on and Giannis is off, I mean, I really enjoy Jabari. Giannis ninth in the league in RPM right now. What he's doing defensively is fantastic. They don't really have anyone else who's good on defense other than him, and they still have been totally around average there. In defensive RPM, Giannis is sixth in the league. In PER, I think he is eighth in the league. I mean, is there a statistical argument that he's not one of the top 15 players in the league right now? I don't know that there is one.
The only argument that he's not an all NBA player is just that the way the roster is split out. You know, like he's probably not one of the top 12. And so if you have the stupid center distinction, I mean, I'm not saying it's stupid in terms of the all NBA, but just in terms of the difference between top 15 and all NBA.
Well, so if you had, was he your first omission among the forwards? Okay, all right. So it was just
he was really my only omission in that way. I wouldn't have really pushed anybody else into that category. Other players are having good seasons, but I thought he was separate. I actually had toughest omission Giannis in my notes.
Yeah, and DeAndre Jordan, I didn't really talk about him as the second team center, but I think just with the way the Clippers have played both on offense and he is a very underrated offensive center. So I think we're pretty much in agreement. The only issue was just that you had AD as a forward and I had him in the center on Giannis. And some others receiving votes, Paul Millsap, Kristaps Porzingis, Kevin Love has been outstanding so far. You have Hassan Whiteside, a little bit of love at center too, just because I think the Heat defense has been pretty good. This argument that like he's not good on defense, I think a lot their perimeter is good, the coaching is good, but I think that idea that he doesn't help the defense, it was dismissed in the playoffs last year and really dismissed so far this year. And then Blake Griffin, another guy who deserves some consideration. The defense defensive effort that he's taken. He's really helped unlock their switching. He's not much of a rim protector still, but as a guy who in a pinch can switch on to every position really and do okay, has really helped them now this year. And he's still an offensive threat, although not as efficient as you'd like. Again, it's just such tough competition. Blake has been better than I thought he would be this year.
Yeah, no arguments. I think Blake's been great, and I like that he's contributing more that's outside of the box score too. He's always been a good player, but doing that helps provide value, and I'd love to see the stagger, but he's doing so well with the starters, you can't really knock it too hard.
The one maybe controversial omission who wasn't actually even in my honorable mentions category was Kyrie Irving, and the reason for that is just that, again, they are worse when he is on the floor than when he's off the floor, and that's really tough, and he plays a lot, you know, with a good players. You know, it's not like he's playing with garbage guys. They usually will play him with Love a lot when he's out of the game, or when LeBron is out of the game. And Kyrie is probably a better playoff player than a regular season player as well, due to his defense. His defense, again, has been a massive problem this year for the Cavs, at least so far in the regular season. His not moving the ball, I think, is also a problem over the course of a regular season. He is by far one of the most dangerous players in the playoffs because he can just be so unstoppable, a guy that you just can't do anything with when he's really on. So he is a very scary playoff player, but I think we also need to be realistic about what he is over the course of the regular season. And, you know, I'm not sure that is, while he is scoring very well and efficiently, he does little else. And I don't think, especially in this season so far with all these great players, that he's someone who is really, you know, a realistic candidate for a top 20 player in the league right now.
Something else to note on the regular season playoff distinction for Kyrie is that he's also one of the best one-on-one scorers in the league, and that becomes a lot more relevant in the playoffs because a lot of defense becomes about forcing those matchups, and he can exploit that better than just about everybody in the league.
Yeah, not only that, but against great defenses that switch, the Warriors obviously being a prime example of that, his ability to go one-on-one, to run 1-3 pick and rolls or 3-1 pick and rolls, make tough shots, again, like that's something that is really essential because some of these defenses in the playoffs are so good at forcing you to go one-on-one, taking away a lot of your options. So again, I think we're talking about just regular season only right now versus the playoffs with Kyrie. All right, so let's move into some of our more whimsical. Well, actually no, let's do the rest of these the actual awards first here. We're not going to do all defense, it's really too early for that, it's a little too granular. Rookie of the month, I think we're both going to be in agreement that's Joel Embiid, full stop.
Yep.
Who's second?
I don't even know.
Jamal Murray.
Probably. He's my guy.
Who else would it be here? I'm calling up the list of rookies.
Dario Saric has done reasonably well, but he's moved into a backup role with the addition of Ersan Ilyasova.
Yeah, Pascal Siakam has been okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you could probably make the argument that he's contributed more to winning than Murray has, especially because Murray had that awful start to the season. But I mean, he's just been going off. Like, he had 24 the other night in like 21 minutes. I mean, he's had some big scoring explosions, and he's up to about average true shooting now for a rookie with the type of shots that he's taking. He's not really providing much on the boards. And his assist rate is okay. He's mostly being asked to score right now. But I think just certainly in terms of like most impressive rookie, he would be up there. And I think he'll probably, and rookie of the year usually is kind of more about stats and potential than just, hey, you know, you're some guy who starts on a playoff team, but you don't put up any traditional stats. So, and I'm fine with that for rookies too, because so few actually help their teams, that having it more skewed towards potential and like box score production, that doesn't bother me too much. So yeah, Murray would probably be my number two pick right now.
Do you want to do Coach of the Month?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Sure, and you can go first while I think about it.
It's a weird one because Luke Walton, in many ways, you know, like, they're playing over their heads, but you and I have talked, we spent almost the entire life of the Dunked On Basketball podcast talking about how the most important thing that a coach can bring to his team is defense. And the Lakers, granted, they also have horrendous personnel for defense, but their defense hasn't been good. So I did kind of question whether that was the right decision. And so I'm going to go with Doc Rivers. I think the Clippers buying in on defense has been a huge part of their success this year. Their personnel change was Luke Richard and Bob Mute, which was a coaching decision as well, to put him into the starting lineup instead of Wes or Alan Anderson or somebody else. And they're buying in. They're playing hard. They've had a couple of just bad games recently, but I'm giving Doc credit.
That's a good one. That's right. And he also has the track record of being, I think, in the top five in NBA coaches. We got asked about that on the Twitter NBA show last week. And I think he, as a coach, because there's been all this kind of GM crap and drama, I think he's still a wonderful coach, has a top five track record in the league. So, you know, I still think he's not quite as good as Kerr or Popovich, but he's definitely up there for sure. And he's got, it may wane, but he's gotten some good production out of the bench. What he's been able to get out of Blake Griffin defensively, also very impressive. Sixth man, this was one of these ones. Lou Williams and Wilson Chandler were my two candidates. And Lou Will obviously has been going off lately, so that might be part of it. But I thought it was going to be like, okay, Lou Will scores well. He's going to be good in the box score stats. But then, you know, if you look at it, Wilson Chandler, he's a wing. He theoretically defends. Like, maybe I'll like kind of go with him instead, sort of be not necessarily to be the contrarian, but just those guys fit the models of one guy's overrated by his stats and one guy's underrated. But that's not true. Lou Williams actually fourth in RPM among shooting guards. He's been great in the on-off. That Lakers bench unit has been killing every single night. He's 18th in PER. He's a 24 PER. Incredibly efficient. Just so miserable to guard, as you talked about on the 15 and 60. So yeah, he is a relatively easy pick over Wilson Chandler to me. And were there any other candidates you considered?
Nope.
Very good. All right, we'll get into some of our more whimsical categories here. Not that whimsical, because, you know, we don't actually have fun on this show, but at least categories that I and Danny invented. But let's talk first about hit water. I'm constantly dehydrated. I try to work out, I'll wake up and start seeing what news is filtered in, and 2 hours later I realize that I slept all night and didn't drink anything, obviously, and then I haven't had anything to drink. And then you feel like you want to drink a bunch of water, but water doesn't really taste that good. It's bland. You feel like you're forcing yourself to do it. It's just, you know, you should be hydrated. It helps you to not get headaches, to perform better in your workouts, to just feel better overall, feel fuller as well. If you're trying to lose weight, drinking a lot of water is great, but water doesn't taste that good. Hint water does taste good. If you're gonna have juice, if you're gonna have soda, no calorie drinks, those don't taste that good. They're not really as good for hydrating. Hint water is just regular water. It's just infused with the taste of fresh fruit. I really enjoy their blackberry. They have watermelon, peach, mango, grapefruit. My girlfriend enjoyed the crisp apple. There's no sugar, no chemicals, just great tasting, all natural fruit flavored water. Health and Self magazines have named Hint water the best flavored water. I really enjoyed it as well. And you also don't have to carry these heavy cases of water back from the store. You just have it delivered right to your doorstep. The way to get started with them, drinkhint.com/capspace is the URL, and you can get for $15 a variety pack that is normally $24. That includes 3 bottles each of Hint's 4 most popular flavors: pineapple, watermelon, crisp apple, and blackberry. Normally $24, you get it for only $15. So that's drinkhint.com/capspace. drinkhint.com/capspace to get that variety pack for $15 delivered to you. And of course, let them know that you came from us. drinkhint.com/capspace. All right, where should we go now?
Most surprising team and player.
What'd you have?
I'll start with the player, and I think we're both in this camp that we like doing older guys, because a younger guy improving is not that big a deal. I mean, it's still great, but Kemba Walker, and yeah, you talked earlier, it might be an aberration, but career highs in basically every single category. His field goal percentage is 5% higher than he's ever had before, better from three, and they've needed that. This is a Charlotte group that does not have the same kind of, they lost some depth. They lost Courtney Lee. They lost Jeremy Lin. He has been such an engine for their offense, and defensively he's been good enough, and he has been better in a way that I didn't expect. So he's my most surprising.
Yeah. Where would they be without him offensively? Right. Like, they're really, it's been a struggle with some of the injuries that they've had too. So I guess I would put him in there. If you had to ask me whether I thought he would be on my third team all NBA this year, or at least even for the first month, I would have said that was very unlikely. Some of the other candidates that I had, Nick Young, we talked about him a little bit. He's now out with that calf injury. I think Derrick Rose is starting to show a little bit of something, although overall he hasn't been that good. Kevin Love is actually, I think, getting pretty close to the level that he was at in Minnesota, at least for this first month of the season. Luke Richard and Bob. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Andrew Harrison. I just didn't see this coming.
Yeah, he's been okay. And Wiggins is shooting too. I mean, it's just that one aspect, but with them being such a disappointment and the fact that he hasn't improved in any of the other areas.
But I shouldn't have used him. I shouldn't have stopped you talking about Luke Richard and Bob Mute, because nothing wrong with saying some good words about my fellow Bruin.
Well, just he's in so much better shape. He is locking guys down again. He was a good defensive player these last few years, but he wasn't in the type of shape that he was. Now he's cut up. He's playing really, really well. He's been able to be a little bit more effective enough with that starting unit that they've been really good. Again, probably not an important enough player to win this award for me. I think it would be Kemba for me too. Giannis would be another one too, just with the incredible step that he's taken again this year to be, by pretty much most statistical analysis, a top 10 player in the league. Another one that I think we should highlight is Terrence Ross. He is on the first page, 50 in the top 50 in the league in PER, shooting the lights out. He is, I think, is finally becoming the player that they really hoped that he could be off the bench. And then Zach Randolph has over a 20 PER in that bench role in Memphis. He has not been good in RPM, but he's been playing with some really rough second units. What he's been able to do just in his own individual statistics, I think, has been quite a renaissance. Coming off the bench has been great for him. Where did you go with surprise team?
The Lakers. I had a conversation with Tim Bontemps. We did a podcast, and one of the questions that I asked him was, is there a chance that the Lakers make the playoffs? And we basically agreed on no. And while I do not expect that to happen, they're a whole heck of a lot closer than I ever anticipated. And in terms of the difference, again, between expectations and results, it's them, even if they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, look, that probably would have been my pick if we were doing this a week and a half ago. Part of that's been due to injuries. They have played at a great level when they've been healthier, so maybe it's unfair to take that away from them. My pick is actually the Milwaukee Bucks. Now 10-9, they have played, I don't think they've gotten blown out once on their home floor. They've been a very tough out at home. They had a rough loss at home to the Warriors and Spurs, but played both of them extremely close. We thought that this team was going to win like 30, 32 games, and they could fall off to that level. But in large part, pushed by Giannis, they were 10-8, now 10-9. They would be my pick. I also considered the Knicks, who are 11-9 right now. They, after that really rough 3-6 start, they are 8-3 since then. And also the Grizz. The fact that they're 14-8 isn't that surprising in and of itself, but if you told me before the year that, hey, Mike Conley is going to miss a third of their games, Marc Gasol is going to rest a couple of games, Zach Randolph is going to miss six straight games due to the death of his mother, Chandler Parsons is basically going to not have played for them at all so far, you told me all of that, I would have thought there's no way that they're over 500. And of course their point differential is kind of under 500, but they just have been so good in close games. I mean, the fact that they're 14-8, I think that raw differential, if you just knew what minutes everyone was going to play before the season, that might be the highest in the league. But I think ultimately I would still go with the Bucks. But the Grizz would be my number two, and Lakers probably number three.
The other team I want to throw in is the Bulls. I was lower on them, I think, than you were. And it's not so much the record. I mean, they're 11-9 when we're recording this. It's that they've played better, way better than I expected. The offense has performed at a level that's been solid. Our offensive rebounding, they've been the best offensive rebounding team in the league. And we both thought their defense was going to suck. And it has been distinctly better than that. And they've been like, it's one of those things where now I'm not going to be surprised if they do better. And that's one of the most appreciable benefits when a team has something like this, is where it changes your expectations. And the Chicago Bulls have absolutely changed my expectations.
I'm a little more pessimistic about them still. They just have had some really bad losses. They've had some big wins, but they just have not been that consistent on a game-to-game basis. We'll talk a little bit more about them, but this wasn't out of the realm of possibility for them, for me, the way maybe the way the Bucks have played, or even the way that the Lakers played for a while, until they now have just been so incredibly injured. So they wouldn't have necessarily been in that conversation for me. If they were 13-7 instead of 11-9, which they easily could be if they hadn't, lost by 25 on the road to the Mavericks the other day. They've had a few of those type of losses that may be a little bit lower on them still. Biggest disappointing team.
Portland Trailblazers. They fell apart without Al-Farouq Aminu. He is their third best player, and he's probably their best defender, but you can't do that. I mean, they're a deep team. They were incredibly healthy last year, and I expected they would be more resilient. I believe they're still last in defense, and when you have the continuity that they boasted going into this season and added talent, and they've dealt with really one injury, everybody else has stayed relatively healthy, it's incredibly disappointing.
This is pretty easy for me. Minnesota Timberwolves have the fifth worst record in the league.
That's another one, but that was, we were hopeful and they're young. Like,
and they're the 28th ranked defense.
Yeah, that part I will absolutely give you. Their defense still being that, and you could throw that on a lot of individual players as well if we're going to do it that way. You know, Wiggins not defending at a higher level. LaVine, I'm a little bit, and starting two bigs and still not defending? No.
You could throw Dallas in that category, but with the injuries, it makes a little bit more sense. I mean, I still think they would be disappointing even if they were healthier, but nonetheless, it's pretty easy Wolves for me, just that their defense has been as bad as it has been. I mean, everyone was like, oh yeah, no way Tibbs lets this team be below average in defense, and they're 28th right now. It's pretty remarkable.
Two other dishonorable mentions: the Wizards, again performing below their talent level. Their starters have been great, their backups have been terrible. And then Atlanta, not for the season as a whole, but just for completely falling apart during the stretch, which is threatening their viability moving forward.
How about player for you?
I'm the Archbishop, but Mario Hezonja. I mean, he has a... Oof. So when I did this, 2.8 PER, 368 true shooting percentage, a player who fills a theoretical, like a massive need for his team, and has not been worthy of really an attempt to fill that role. There are lots of different ways that players can disappoint, but his is the most visceral for me because they need him, he should be able to do it, and he just can't.
Yeah, for players, that's a good one that I didn't consider that I should have. That might be close to my pick. For players, I mean, all the top players in the league are playing well right now, right? Like, I mean, there's really no one that you can point to unless they've been injured. You know, Chandler Parsons and Dirk, it's been disappointing that they haven't been able to play, particularly Parsons. But, you know, the injury is kind of a rough reason to put someone on that
list.
Oh,
wait, can I do a positive one quickly? How do we not talk about Brook Lopez's three-point shooting? Because that was one of the craziest things for me for the first 3 weeks of the season, and it's just the truth. Now.
Yeah, that's true. His overall performance, I mean, he was already really good. That's why
I thought
about him and I left him out. But yeah, I mean, that particular aspect has been an enormous positive surprise. And Marc Gasol's three-point shooting as well would be another one.
Again last night. Okay, but more negative players.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, let's stop being so positive. You're ruining our reputation.
Tony Parker falling off a cliff?
Yeah, that was always coming though. I think like that wasn't a disappointment to me because I expected him to disappoint, if that makes any sense. But all right, so here are some of the lists that I had among the non-injured players. Buddy Hield would be one. He hasn't really even been in the rotation in New Orleans when everyone has been healthy. He's played pretty poorly. He had one okay game against Oklahoma City. Miles Plumlee, not even in the rotation now after getting a four-year, $52 million contract from the Bucks in restricted free agency. Evan Turner, again, we expected him to be bad. I don't know if I expected him to be worst RPM in the league bad. Luol Deng, I thought he at least would help the Lakers this year in like the first year or two of that contract, but playing at the three, being another year older, he really has been a massive disappointment. I think he's averaging 6 points a game. I mean, that's awful. I mean, and the fact is that Brandon Ingram is like way ahead of him in the rotation. Ingram is a prospect, but the fact that Ingram be playing better than him right now, and he probably has been, frankly, is concerning. And Robert Covington, he's been actually pretty good defensively this year, but just shooting like 30% from the field, and now he's like going to miss some time with a sprained knee and an illness. You know, I think that's going to turn around for him. I'm not like concerned about that, but if you just look at, hey, what this guy's performance compared to what we expected from him, the Sixers might have another couple of wins if he'd been able to hit a shot so far this year.
Another one I feel we have to include is Nick Vucevic. He always had this rock solid offensive efficiency. And, you know, that was the reason, kind of the rationale.
Rock solid at like 50% true shooting.
Yeah, but I mean, he was that, and now he's not even that. You know, like that's disappointing. And he's been griping that he got moved to the bench, which has been the best thing that happened to the Magic. He's been a disappointment in that way. And I feel like, to a degree, Mason Plumlee just not being able to pick up any slack defensively. I mean, there's a lot of blame to go around in terms of the Blazers' defense, but I always lay that at the feet of the center mostly.
Yeah, Vucevic, Plumlee, a lot of these guys are guys that we didn't think were that good, and they're kind of fulfilling that. And Deng falls into the category. Covington, Hield was one I did kind of expect him to struggle. Deng and Covington are maybe more disappointing for me because I thought they actually would be okay this year, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I have to pick one. I think I'll just go with Buddy because they just desperately hoped, needed him to look like he could be the second star next to AD. Maybe they're going to get another chance in the lottery again this year at the pace that they're on, but you don't think that with AD on your team you're going to get a chance at a superstar in the lottery very often. And It seems, even after a month, pretty clear to me that they blew that one and that they could have gotten Jamal Murray. So it's not even so much just disappointment because of the hopes that this Pelicans organization had for him. And it looks like they are, granted, it's only a month, but he's old enough where I think his performance after a month has got to raise some serious alarm.
I'm not sure if you did these, but best win and worst loss.
No, I did do them. What'd you have?
Best win, and I specifically did not include December because I felt like it. Best win for me was the Clippers beating the Spurs in San Antonio on November 5th, 116-92, just a huge win. They also beat the crap out of the Blazers, but the Spurs, I see them in a different place. And if we were including the games that have occurred between then, the Clippers' domination over the Cavs would be in serious consideration and probably beat that.
Yeah, I had those two, and the Spurs winning by 29 at Golden State on opening night. I mean, that's got to be in this conversation, and that seems like it's a fluke. We'll see what happens when those teams play again, but especially when you consider this was like the debut of that super team and just to absolutely throttle them, like that's one there. And the Lakers being Golden State at home, I mean, anybody who beats Golden State, that's got to be up there with the way the team is playing. But my actual pick was the Orlando Magic at the Spurs.
That's my pick for worst loss.
Well, here's why.
But for the same reason.
Yeah. Well, but this is why I think it's the best win. Remember where the Magic were at that point. This was their second game switching up Biombo to be in the starting lineup. They had just lost at home to the Bucks, not shown really any signs of life in that game. Vucevic is kind of carping a little bit about having to come off the bench. They just put DJ Augustin in the starting lineup over Payton. And now they're going on the road against San Antonio. It looks like their season, they're just grasping at straws, and they just absolutely shut down what has been a great Spurs offense this year, 95-82. Just like that, and they've been playing great since then. They've had some really nice wins. They beat Detroit on the road, had a rough loss at Memphis, but their defense now is getting into that top five level we thought they would need to be successful, and that may have saved their season. They're 9-12 right now. They could actually still be in contention for the playoffs, especially if we see the team like the Knicks falter, and that we may look back on that win as turning their season around. That to me is one of the most, maybe the most unexpected win of the season, both the fact that they won and the fact that they won rather comfortably.
I also want to mention the Jazz just demolishing the Rockets. That was a 20-point win, I think, in Utah, and the Jazz were on a back-to-back. I just didn't see that coming, and it was just an illustration of how good this team could be long-term.
All right, so worst loss, was that your pick for worst loss, was the Spurs at home against the Magic?
Because of the context of how badly the Magic had played in their prior game. And yeah, the lineup change was a big thing. But in terms of, you know, expectations and all that, I think it was there. And I look for games where it's just, you know, it defies the expectations. I could have looked at the 538 odds on it, but it was that for me. And that isn't to discredit like Orlando's performance in the game itself. I thought they, when I rewatched parts of that game just because I tried to figure out what the heck happened, they did a really nice job. But it's still San Antonio against Orlando in that circumstance.
Here's some of the candidates I had for worst loss. Indiana last night, just because they got clowned worse than I've ever seen an NBA team get clowned in a game. I mean, it was just like the Warriors were playing out there and still just destroying them. I mean, just giving up 60 to Clay and never changing a single thing about the defensive strategy. Like, I asked Nate McMillan after that, or I didn't ask him, Nate Taylor did actually, about twice. He asked him, hey, you know, did you guys change up at all on Clay? Like, what things did you try? And Nate was basically just like, well, you know, we just wanted to like play harder and execute better. So, and I couldn't perceive anything. So I think it's fair when you've asked the coach about it to say that they didn't do anything at all.
Can I make a quick interjection? There were three people involved in that anecdote and all three of them were named Nate. That's super weird.
I actually wasn't really involved. I was there listening, but the Clippers at Brooklyn, blowing a 16-point lead in the fourth quarter to Brooklyn. Not too good. The Pelicans losing at Dallas with basically, you know, when Dallas was at their absolute most injured before D. Will even had come back. The Pels had gotten Drew Holiday. They looked like they might be about to go on a run, and then they just lost in pretty pathetic fashion. And that's, you know, losing at Dallas is not the end of the world. You're on the road. You're not that good of a team. But just for kind of what it meant, where it's like, oh, there's hope. That's right. They're the Pelicans. The Hornets blowing a 7-point lead in the final minute against the Wolves was pretty ugly at home. They had some real nasty mistakes pace and execution, like Nick Batum. There had no timeouts left, so they inbounded it to Wiggins, and he just dribbled up and took a three. Nick Batum was not trying to run him off the line at all, really. Kemba Walker had a turnover in the backcourt, just kind of lost the ball out of bounds. That's really, anytime you probably have a 98% win expectancy, up seven in the last minute, and to blow that was pretty awful. And then the Bulls on Friday, a lot of this is recency bias, I didn't go back through the entire season. The Bulls on Friday, 107-82 loss at Dallas, and then Rajon Rondo in his glorious Dallas homecoming had five turnovers and 2 points. They weren't guarding him at all. I always really enjoy when players that you know that everyone hated their deficiencies when they're on the team, that then their prior teams just ruthlessly take advantage of their deficiencies when they come back into town. The Warriors doing that against, it wasn't the same regime anymore, the Warriors doing that against Ellis last night too with Clay was another example, or any team that David Lee has ever played on getting put in pick and roll defense. But yeah, losing by 25 at Dallas, and then Rondo got suspended for getting into an altercation with coach Jim Boylan after the game, and you would have to imagine that since Boylan is their defensive coordinator, that was probably related to Rondo's defense, which has been awful. That's really just such a bad loss after they had beaten the Cavs at home the night before.
I was trying to, off the top of my head, pick a Nuggets collapse, and the one I thought of was that Oklahoma City game where they were ahead basically the entire thing and then blew it and then lost in overtime. But I'm sure there are a couple other ones too. Toronto, I think they blew a game. The Trailblazers, there were just a bunch of them.
Dunk. So I think I'll go with that Bulls one as my pick. Dunk of the month. We added this. I went and watched NBA.com's compilation of the best 50 dunks. Tyler Zeller was the victim on three of them.
Yay!
and JaVale on two. So congratulations, those two guys are accounting for. And JaVale, those two guys like don't even ever play either. That's the best part. To account for a good 10% of the best dunks of the month when you're like barely out there at all. I mean, hey, I don't want to make fun of guys too bad. Like, you have to jump, you have to contest. Like, you know, I respect that people do that. Like, it's better than just getting out of the way because you're scared. And but nonetheless, not the greatest job from those guys in that particular aspect. But yeah, so you said you had one that popped out to you immediately. Which one was it?
Zach LaVine on Alex Len. It was the first real post. It was the first real poster dunk of LaVine's career. Also, it occurred in November, which gives it added bonus for me.
They showed it on the scoreboard in Phoenix. It was on the road.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, and it was one of those great ones. I in person covered when Amari Stoudemire dunked on Anthony Tolliver, and it felt like that, where you just got this pit in your stomach of like, I can't even imagine being that guy. My honorable mentions, there are two that were just spectacular. Victor Oladipo's dunk on Dwight Howard was insane.
Like, that's another pick.
really nice dunk.
He did the Dominique, like two hands on the ball, like double pump, pull it to the side, and then do it on it. And like, Oladipo is like 6'3" and a half, you know, like he's for him to do like a off 2 feet two-handed double pump dunk like that over like one of the best shot blockers in the league, because like Dwight went up with his left hand to try and block it, and so Oladipo like pulled it to the left to get it past his left hand and then just crammed it on. It's fantastic.
And Dwight's so strong too, like it's not just that he's one of these like JaVale McGee length guys, like he's big, it's hard to get around him, and he did that. And then actually I realized there are two other honorable mentions that both involve the Warriors, and biased because I saw both of them in person. Wiggins on JaVale was great. And then it's a different category, but the alley-oop on Monday night, it's a different type of thing. But if we're going to count highlight plays, and it was a dunk, Draymond off a jump ball, Draymond Green, full court baseball pass to Steph Curry, and an almost blind alley-oop to Kevin Durant.
In the air too. Steph was
in
the
ball air. The ball never touched the ground. Curry threw the alley-oop in the air. I can't recall offhand seeing anything like that. I tried to think of a Miami highlight because I'm sure the Heat.
Yeah,
did it.
There was one where I think like Wade caught the ball, saving it out of bounds. There's actually, I mean, one of the awesome ones was like that, the 08 Olympic team, where I think like Wade, like they threw a long outlet. Wade was at about like the 3-point line, caught the ball going out of bounds, threw like a behind the back alley-oop to Kobe Bryant. But that, you know, that was against like China or something. So, no, I mean, that one was nice, but I like dunks on people. Like you're not going to win, be in the conversation for dunk of the year if you're not dunking on somebody in my particular book.
Yeah, It gets an honorable mention for me, but it doesn't win. I mean, LaVine over Len was just amazing.
Yeah, my pick was the Oladipo one. A few other ones that needed to be talked about: John Simmons on JaVale. This one didn't get any play. Gerald Henderson, the first play of the game, Sergio Rodriguez ran an alley-oop for him. I think they had scripted this. And Sabonis, the first play of his NBA career, was just being on the ground. Henderson like jumped from pretty much outside the lane, and like his body was at a 45 degree angle, like on Sabonis's head as he dunked it. That was ridiculous. A few other ones that need to be mentioned: Blake Griffin coming down the lane off of 1 foot on Robin Lopez, and Russell Westbrook in that game, Houston at OKC, to ice it where he came in on Capella with the left. That was pretty nice. And then Rudy Gobert has had two. One was that lefty one on Kristaps Porzingis. That was nasty. And then the dunk that I will forever remember now. I didn't see it live, but it's been on social media today. This is last night. The third arm dunk, where it was actually called for a foul, but he came in over Julius Randle with a two-hand dunk over his back, and then was called for an offensive foul. It should not be possible to be called for an offensive foul when you dunk the ball, and especially not if you dunk the ball with two hands. Like, whatever you do to someone in the air, if you're dunking the ball with two hands, that should not be a foul. And so then Gobert tweeted out a Vine of it, and he was like, "Oh, I must have fouled him with my third arm." Ah, man, Rudy's Twitter account is quite excellent, actually. He favored, because someone did like the jock snitch, which is like the, because we talk about someone and then someone will be like, "Oh, what do you think of this?" At Rudy Gobert 27. And I think it was me saying in the Hall of Fame podcast that like I didn't see Rudy Gobert getting to the Hall of Fame unless he has like Mutombo type longevity. And then someone like added him, and then he favorited the tweet. Like, by the way, just don't do that. Like, do athletes like really need to be like bombarded with our opinions by adding them and putting it like right in their face? Like, it's got to be hard enough to be an athlete and have everyone constantly scrutinizing your every move that like now you need people like sending it to you too. But in any event, that's always been something that kind of annoyed me. Like, if he wants to find out about it, he can search it out and find it. Or like this idea that like you're basically like telling on me for talking about it. I'm like, it's a public sphere. Like, if he wants to find it, he'll find it.
I want to mention one more dunk. It didn't occur in an NBA game, but it was in a D-League game, so it sort of counts, which was, I don't know if you've seen the Derrick Jones Jr. dunk, but it was on an alley-oop, and just the distance he was from the rim when he caught the ball, like, it's just insane. Like, it's one of those just great dunks.
Yeah, I have not seen that one, actually.
I will send it to you.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a few more here. Player that you are most interested in watching over the next month?
Rodney Hood. I want to see the Jazz closer to full strength. I mean, even if we're not counting Derek Favors on that, which is sad, but maybe we're not. And Hood is a great player. I think I picked him as being my favorite for most improved player. I haven't watched a ton of the Jazz yet this year, so I'm going to watch him.
Mine is going to be Emmanuel Mudiay. 9.6 PER, 56% true shooting. Turning it over, actually not as often as he had been, 17.4%, which is still high, but not as bad as it had been, but still 24% usage and 56% true shooting. I mean, that's at some point, if your team is trying to win, I think he has shown some flashes. You like what you see out of him just watching him, but again, just the shots aren't going in for him. And he did not close that game yesterday against the Sixers. I don't think he was injured. I didn't watch the whole game. It was Nelson and Barton closing the game. Jamal Murray also is making a bid for more playing time. Is he's only 20 years old still, so a long way to go. Point guards develop late. A lot of what his issue is his jump shot. But I want to see if he can start to become at least some modicum of efficient, or dial back his usage, because 24% usage when you're shooting that bad of a percentage is hurting the team. And they have plenty of other scorers on this team.
They do. I think the last thing we have are monthly trends that will continue, and we're an aberration.
The Chicago Bulls are now, after a hot start, shooting 31.2% on threes, and they also have the lowest number of attempts in the league. That, I predict, if not the absolute lowest number of attempts in the league, the percentage. And Doug McDermott, they have been missing him. He may come back. I don't know how much he's going to play, but he'll help a little bit. Mirotic is going to shoot better on threes. He's had a slow start, really, it seems like every year from three-point range, but he ended up shooting 39% after last year. So they'll be a little bit better, but I think they're still, as long as Rondo is playing and then Grant is his backup, backup. You know, he looked just as bad yesterday against the Blazers. He's not really the answer.
But when they get Michael Carter-Williams back, he'll really help their shooting.
Yeah, and he's going to play more too. What's yours?
The Clippers allowing a ton of mid-range shots. That's something they want to do, and it's not a bad thing. You know, that's a sign of a good defense, and I fully expect that to continue.
Yeah, the switching, having DeAndre Jordan back there to help, all that are things that really lend to a lot of mid-range shots. What's your aberration?
I have two, and the reason why I chose them is because they're both ends of the same basic question, and it's Phoenix's horrendous three-point defensive luck. So they've been giving up almost 40% from three and 41.6% from the corner. That's just unsustainable. Even if they're playing bad defense, that will improve. And on the other side of the same thing, Milwaukee is giving up 30.5 threes a game, but opponents are only shooting 31% on those. And so I think they'll improve a little bit on the attempt rate, which they need to, but they're getting some good fortune defensively. And yeah, they do have long arms and they are contesting, but over time that regresses to the mean.
I had two as well. Dallas's defense, they are allowing the lowest number of shots in the restricted area right now. They've been solid defensively at times this year. I think that they are going to both get worse on defense, and that shot attempt number is going to go up. They're either going to be out of it and they're going to stop trying on D, or Dirk's going to come back and then he'll really hurt their defense. Obviously will help their offense a ton. And then the other one that I think is an aberration is Utah being one of the worst teams in offensive rebounding. That's, I think, it's just because Favors has been out. They haven't been playing he and Gobert together. Once Favors returns, hopefully that'll actually happen. If that doesn't happen, then they will continue to be one of the worst in offensive rebounding. But with those two guys in there, that should get better.
Are we done here?
Oh, that's my line. But yes.
Yeah, no. I realized as we were doing this that, yeah, we spend a lot of time working on these, but I legitimately enjoy the process a lot. And I'm happy we do it more frequently than, you know, like at the halfway point or something like that, because it really forces you to think about the totality of what's happened so far. And there's been a lot of great performances, a lot of great moments.
Yeah, these actually take a lot. Because I'm like, oh, yeah, this would be an easy one to do. We don't have to, like, watch a bunch of games and stuff. And then I find that I've spent, like, 4 or 5 hours researching it. It's like, yeah, all right, this wasn't that easy to do. But it's good that we do it. And then, you know, at least we can kind of build on this for future editions as we try and do this every month or so. I usually end up being a little bit less frequent than that. Don't forget about our sponsors today. Soothe, you can get $30 off an in-home massage with Soothe via that CapSpace code. Also, Hint Water, fantastic flavored water. Drinkhint.com/CapSpace will get you a variety pack, normally $24, for $15 delivered to your home. And if you're interested in sponsoring the show as well, send me an email, natebduncan@gmail.com. We plugged that Locked On Warriors already. Twitter NBA show will have come out by the time you hear this, I think. We did Clippers and Warriors. And what's the other one? Because I couldn't remember what it was.
Cavs-Knicks.
Actually, be interested. That's in New York, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'm actually going to be very interested to see what happens in that game. So that's going to be an awesome slate. Check out the Twitter NBA show. And that'll do it for today's show. Should be back with one more show this week. Follow me on Twitter @NateDuncanNBA. That's how you can keep up with the Periscope show as well. Follow me at Periscope, Nate Duncan NBA as well. Danny is Danny LaRue. Talk to y'all next time.